I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in downtown Baltimore. This episode, I watched Netflix's The Witcher Blood Origin, so obviously I'm going to talk about it because I love sci-fi and Black women who lead in films and media and blah, blah, blah. There's a Black lead in this. Black woman lead in this, so duh. Gonna watch it anyway. But first, so the time that you are, the Monday following the release of this episode is the day that the United States observes Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And in Baltimore, that is particularly important to us for a number of different reasons, but largely because of the tradition that is associated with it. One of the things that you might not know about Baltimore is that there is a lot of Black history in Baltimore, but also civil rights history in Baltimore. And a lot of firsts in Baltimore too. One of the things that you may not know is obviously it was one of the cities that had a chapter of the Black Panther Party here, duh, here in DC. Two of the most places with the largest populations of Black folks in the country, in these cities per capita, I guess, per size, I guess, if you want to go there, like according to the size of the population and how many of its citizens identify as a part of the diaspora. And outside of that, though, if you go back further, the NAACP was headquartered here and it was founded. Yeah, it was headquartered here. Also, the very first Black newspaper was, one of the very first Black newspapers in the country were founded right here in Baltimore. And the importance, the significance of both the Black-owned or Black-owned, run, staffed newspaper being headquartered here or being established here is that, and the NAACP being headquartered here is that members of the NAACP were part of the establishment of the Afro, which is the oldest Black newspaper in the country, but then, in Maryland, but one of the oldest in the country. Anyway, so there's a lot of history here, lots and lots of history. There's more to it than that. There's a lot of history here, actually. If you Google Baltimore, city established in the 1700s. So again, one of the oldest cities in the country, having a lot of civil rights history, Black history, just general history to begin with, but also very important important things happened here in Black history. In Maryland itself, there's a lot of important Black history right here in Maryland. Surrounds DC, and then between DC and Baltimore, seven of the Divine Nine are housed right here in and around Baltimore, or excuse me, in and around Maryland. Alpha is headquartered here. Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated is headquartered here. Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated is headquartered right here in Baltimore. And five of the Divine Nine are headquartered in DC, which is down the street. So there's a lot of Black history here. There's more where that came from, obviously. Lots of Black music history right here in Baltimore. Billie Holiday, obviously. The Cab Calloway, though. Ella Fitzgerald. Ubi Blake. Right here, Baltimore. These are Baltimore legends. There's Cisco. Okay, Drew Hill. Okay, let's not get it twisted. We gave you Druid Hill. Okay, and Cisco. We gave you Mario. He calls himself Mario. Monique. Okay, Tupac Shakur. Okay, Jada Pinkett Smith. Okay, many more where that came from, my dear. Right here in the Baltimore city limits, that's what we gave the world. And many more from there. There's a lot of actually, there's a whole lot of actors and directors that came from Baltimore that aren't Black, that I guess you wouldn't know from their, you couldn't tell from their accent that they're from here, but nevertheless, they're from here. Baltimore has produced a lot, but specifically in the Black community, Baltimore has produced a whole lot and holds a whole lot. And so one of the things that I became accustomed to when I first moved here and I thought was so grand is one of the traditions that Baltimore has kept for a long time now. And this particular tradition started in the 90s, I believe, with the city's first Black mayor, which was Kurt Smoot. If you say the name Kurt Smoot here, that name means something to a whole lot of people. And you don't even have to be super, you don't even have to be in your 70s or 80s to know that name. I know people who are in their late 40s and 50s who still hold that name high, revere that name, Kurt Smoot or Smoke. Kurt Smoot. Kurt Smoot. It's a K, not a T. Kurt Smoot. If you Google that, hold on. Kurt. Yep, it's S-C-H, Smoke. It's like smoke with a C in it. So it's Smoke. Anyway, Kurt Lydell Smoot is an American, I thought he passed away. Oh, that he is still living. I apologize immensely. But that name is revered around here. Because he was the mayor of Baltimore from 1987 to 1999. And in that time, he did a lot of things for Baltimore. If you know anything about the United States and what happened in the 80s to American cities, United States cities, big urban cities, is that crack happened. Heroin was happening in the 70s. Heroin was happening in the 60s and 50s, if we're honest. But crack happened in the 80s. And huge distribution happened. And a lot of people starting in the 60s and moving on into the 80s, a lot of white flight was happening. And Baltimore is a unique city in that, you know, before white flight, what prompted white flight was actually blockbusting. I'm sure that this is a technique that has happened globally for different reasons and targeting different communities or in support of different communities, but it was an attempt to allow Black people specifically the opportunity to live in spaces where they could afford, but because of racial discrimination, they were denied. And so blockbusting happens like this. And there's tons of books and articles and movies even that are about blockbusting. But there's one book in particular that I read, and I forgot the name of the person who wrote it, but it's literally called Not on My Block. Or is it Not in My Neighborhood? Not in My Neighborhood, and it's specific to blockbusting in Baltimore. But this is blockbusting in a nutshell, and this is going to be relevant in a second. It's going to be relevant to Kurt Smoot in a second. I'm going to make it make sense. So blockbusting, it happens like this. You get someone who's Jewish or someone who's white, and you get them to buy up some property in a neighborhood that is predominantly white. Why? Because they are going to live there. Actually not Jewish, white, because even Jewish folks for a certain, part of Baltimore's history were relegated to certain communities, a certain side of the city. So let me not say Jewish, because it was really real. And people forget that Jewish people, Irish, Italians were not considered white. They were made white. This concept of what whiteness is, they were made white in like the 60s and 70s because to differentiate between them and us, really, like white people were like, okay, well, you guys can be white, I guess. But you guys, you Black people, you gonna stay Black, and we gonna keep making our skin color the barrier, the thing that makes you different. So anyway, but here in Baltimore, in the 50s, 40s, 50s, and into the 60s, Jewish people were really not. Jewish people were not considered white. The Irish were not considered. There were more white, considered more white than Jewish individuals. But Baltimore was very segregated. And it's for the most part kind of segregated today, but economics also play a role in that. But back in the day, talking about 60s and 70s, it was racially segregated. And there was some economic separation too, but it was mostly racial. Because even if you were poor, just like your white brethren, you still could not live in Hamden, and be able to thrive in Hamden. You were gonna get racial, you were gonna get attacked and mess with, because that's where poor white working class lived, and that was not a great place for if you were black to live, or if you were brown at all to live. But if you lived in Mount Royal, you could do something there. That was where the more affluent black folks lived, on Mount Royal. Or if you lived in, Southeast, Baltimore, there are parts of Southeast Baltimore, which if you looked at them today, you'd be like, nah, black people didn't live here. Turns out, yes, they did. Until they were forced out for other reasons. But anyway, blockbusting was having white people, or people who were considered white, to buy up property in areas and neighborhoods that were deemed for white people, because redlining. Anyway, so blockbusting happens where white person buys up a property and then turn around and sells it to someone who's black in the context of, I'm pretty sure that's how it went all over the place, but gross oversimplification, that's how it happened in Baltimore. A white person would buy a property and then turn around and sell it to a black person. Or what they would do is they would pose as if they were getting the loan. They would kind of perpetrate, but like legally, it was like gray at best. But basically they were making it seem like these white people, these white bankers and whatnot were, or these, no, not white bankers, the black people would secure a loan, and then these white people would come in and talk with these white realtors and these white sellers and say, oh yeah, yeah, I'm the one that's buying this house. And psych, they were actually the proxy for the black people. And then they would close the deal, and then here come this black family moving in, and surprise, surprise. Now you got a black family living on this block, despite your best efforts to stop them, and that's blockbusting. So they just kept doing that over and over again. And I believe the Weinbergs, which is a huge family name, it's a huge name, Jeanette and Harry Weinberg. I think that foundation, I think the namesakes, I think Jeanette and Harry, on the East Coast specifically, but in Baltimore particularly, I think they were big blockbusters trying to move black people in spaces where they could afford to live, but were discriminated against and could not on their own live there without help from a front, somebody being a front for them, basically. So anyway, that's blockbusting. And so because of blockbusting, a lot of white families said, you know what, bump it. Blockbusting, and let's be clear, economic downturn, but also blockbusting. People, white folks were like, you know what? I'm going out Woodlawn, Owings Mills. Never Dundalk, because that was poor. So they were not going to Dundalk. That was where the poor white people lived, and they did not want to be associated with them. So they would go Towson, Columbia, all of these. Well, I don't know how old Columbia is, but anyway, they would move out of the city, and then they would leave these properties. So you got a lot of turnover here, where the black population, the black and brown population, is pretty much static for the most part, and then huge majority of white folks leaving the city, and there's not enough people moving into the city to take over these vacants. And so now not only do you have a lot of unrest because of racial injustice, but then you have economic downturn because the steel mills and the big factories aren't doing so hot these days. And then you've got white flight. So you've got tax dollars leaving the city and not coming back at the same rate. And just as an aside, this is something that Baltimore is still struggling with. People leaving and not the turnover exceeding the growth. Even though people are moving, and it's still headquarters to a lot of stuff, one of the things that Baltimore is fighting right now is getting people in at the same rate that they're leaving. And I think a lot of cities during the pandemic were dealing with that. There were whole articles written on people who were saying, I'm leaving New York forever because it's too daggone going expensive and lots of the blue, blue, blue and whatever. So like you read those articles. And if you're listening to me and you're in the UK, then you probably read those same articles about London or any other major metropolitan city that people were flocking to because it was the thing to do in this pandemic. People who were not ever from these places and had no real desire to set root and contribute to the community. And I'm saying it that way. You set root and contribute to the community, but just wanted to be there to flex. They bonked out and said, I could flex in Connecticut for cheaper than flexing. I could go into the city when I want to, but live in Connecticut for cheap. And so that's what they're doing. And so a lot of folks, we're still dealing with gentrification. Let's be for real. Gentrification is hitting Baltimore hard. So people are coming in. But nevertheless, like we're dealing with it just like everybody else, making sure that our rate of leaving is comparable to our rate of coming to the city. Anyway, but get flash backward to blockbusting. So blockbusting happens in the 60s and it continues in the 70s. And white folks are leaving and there are not enough black and brown people living here to replace, to move into those homes that are now vacant, to those places, to the homes that are now vacant. So you got a lot of vacants. And also the economy is becoming to be in the crapper. Because the 70s was not a great time economically in the United States. And then you have heroin is still a thing in all urban cities, but you're moving through the 70s and it's not great. 80s come and not only is there the gap between the poor and the wealthy huge, but now heroin has turned into the drug of choice now is crack. And you have this huge epidemic, a lot of greed associated with, and of course helped very heartily by the US government and their itch to invade other countries and tell other people what to do. And we all already know Iran-Contra and what they had to do to give the Contras there. Anyway, we already know that story that the US government literally did back paid drug dealers essentially to fund a war, a secret war that they were waging against people they didn't like, or a group of folks that they, a regime that they didn't like. And as a result, or byproduct of empowering drug dealers, drugs flooded the United States. So it's kind of like karma, karmic retribution at the expense of black and brown people. And poor people everywhere in the United States, but specifically hardest hit were the black and brown communities in the United States. And so a lot of those black and brown communities, or a lot of those black and brown people lived in the cities, and Baltimore was hit hard. And so crack epidemic happened. So not only do you have economic downturn, now you have a huge drug problem and lots of high violence. And there's a time in Baltimore's history in the 80s where the governor and other mayors decided that, you know what, let's invest in Baltimore. Let's revitalize Baltimore. When you watch a Ravens football game and it's here, or an Orioles game and it's here, the harbor that you see today is not the harbor, shoot, of the 80s for sure, and barely of the 90s. This is a brand new harbor. And so actually most of the 90s, much of the 90s, it was still an old, not very cool, touristy harbor. The touristy part of it is relatively new. And in fact, the Orioles didn't move to Camden Yards until 2008, something like that, maybe 2009, something like that. The early 2000s is when they moved to Camden Yards, where they are now. So that stadium isn't too terribly old. It's less than 20 years old, I do believe. Or maybe it's approaching 20 years old now, but when I moved here in 2008, it was like a year later, then they tore down the, stadium that was on, 33rd Street, Oriole Park. They tore that down because we were now focused on the one that's down the street from where I live now. So anyway, so the harbor was revitalized, and in an effort to try to attract people back to the city, and that's like the start of bringing people back to Baltimore, despite all of its many problems, still trying to find creative ways to bring people back to Baltimore. And one of the ways, it was like a multi-layered thing. So it was to honor the rich Black history that's here in Baltimore, as well as to attract people who had moved away from Baltimore back. And in collaboration with the Baltimore City, the Department of Promotional Arts or whatever, like the department that is a part of the city government that plans, or at least it's a nonprofit that's associated or funded by the city government that plans, a lot of the huge activities that happen in Baltimore, any of the major events, Artscape, the African American Festival, Stone Soul Picnic back in the day when they had Stone Soul Picnic, any of the cultural heritage activities you can think of, I think it's the Latinx Hispanic celebration, the Greek Fest, the Lithuanian, like all of the cultural, because again, there's a lot of cultures here in Baltimore. More than you think, more than you see on TV, more than a lot of folks give us credit for, but it's a huge melting pot here. There's so many different cultures here and countries that are connected to people who are connected to so many different countries here. It's stupid. Anyway, and so many languages spoken here. It's stupid. Anyway, but it's cool is what I'm really saying. It's bananas. Anyway, which is why I love Baltimore so much, despite all of the issues that goes through. There's just so much here. Anyway, so I think it's this promotion, Baltimore City Office of Promotion and the Arts or whatever. Anyway, the people who put on the big old festivals and the parades and stuff, that office, working with then Mayor Kurt Smoot in 1990, established the MLK Parade, the first of its kind in Baltimore, or the first time that the city had ever truly done anything like that. And so it began that, and I don't know if the street that it happens on was named in the 90s after MLK or not, but there's a particular boulevard that if you watch it at O's game, if you watch a Ravens game, at some point that big road, so Pratt Street runs along both Oriole Park and Ravens Stadium. But sometimes when you do a big zoom out, there is another big street that runs parallel to Pratt Street. If you pull it up on a map, it'll make sense to you. But anyway, and that big street is called MLK Jr. Boulevard. And so at Utah, the parade itself starts at Utah Street at the Social Security office. Or no, not Social Security. Is that Social Security? Is that one of the branches? Pause. Fun fact. If you ever get any information from Social Security, you ever help your family member deal with Social Security information, it's Baltimore. It's right out here. The when you mail in stuff, you mail in it. It says Woodlawn, but Woodlawn is like 2 seconds outside, like a hair's breadth outside of the city limits. And because the Social Security is so big and sprawling, they have offices all over Baltimore City and in the county where they are headquartered, or where they have a lot of offices. So anyway, you're likely sending stuff right here to Baltimore or right here into the greater Baltimore area. Anyway, so, but the parade itself begins, the parade route really is Utah and MLK. And then it goes down to Baltimore Street. It stops at Baltimore Street. And right at 40, the intersection of 40, and I'm saying all of this like you know what I'm talking about, but if you pull it up on a map, these streets that I'm saying, you'll know them. At the intersection of 40 and MLK is where the mayor and the big grand bandstand is, where all of the groups that are in the parade are announced. And then again, the parade, it finishes at Baltimore Street, and then you walk back up to where the parade began and get your car or whatever, or you go out into, because it's still downtown, you can literally just park where you're going to end up and then get Uber up to the start of the parade and then just be near your car and then go have drinks or go have food after the parade. That's literally what I've done for darn near a decade, because, you know, the pandemic happened. No, I'd done it for over a decade. Yeah. Because we did it in 2019. And so, yeah, so like I did it for about 10 years. Go to the parade, whoop, 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 march in the parade for the National Panhellenic Council. So I would march under the NPHC banner with my colors on, my Sigma Gamma Rho colors on, and we would always participate. The council was always, ever since the beginning of this thing, the council, NPHC council, always had marched in the parade. Martin Luther King Jr. was an alpha. Black Greek history goes deep. And so, of course, all of the Divine Nine support this parade. And so, of course, it made sense that in 2020, actually 2020 was the last parade. So in 2020, we marched in it and we were hearing about COVID or this thing of COVID that was happening. And of course, 21 and 22, there was no parade because safety, COVID was still around and other things were popping up. And so we understood. And so what we would do is just commemorate the day in other ways on those days. And so this year we were looking forward to marching, and if you're from Baltimore, you already know where I'm at. And if you're not from Baltimore and you've been listening to me, then you know where I'm going. This year, the parade is once again canceled. Now, mind you, before you start wagging your fingers at us, we were always going to be masked up. It was outdoor. We were always going to be masked up. And yes, large events are hard to make sure that you are well, but we were going to do our due diligence, have the necessary things in place, but we wanted to participate because we got to commemorate. Yes, we donate. Yes, we do service. We also wanted to show force and show up support. You got to be out there. You got to be seen. And of course, we wanted to do this. Well, come to find out, one of the things that since I've been involved in the NPHC is that the Office of Promotional Events and the Arts or whatever the office name is, they are notoriously behind the eight ball. Baby, when I tell you that the details for the Juneteenth celebration, I mentioned this earlier. AFRAM is the African American Festival, and it usually happens in one of the hottest parts of the summer. It's like August, one of the hottest parts of the summer. And so what they wanted to do last year was have it sooner. The problem is they didn't start planning it for it to be sooner until freaking March. And in March, that's when they decided, you know what? We want this thing on Juneteenth. Juneteenth. We just want to go hog wild on Juneteenth weekend. Now, here's the problem with that. Everybody had already been planning what they were going to do Juneteenth weekend, and then here you come taking over everything. So, and that was because of the Office of Promotional Arts. And anyway, so whatever. So they're notoriously late. And so the MLK parade, I don't think, usually the MLK parade is always that, what is that, the second Tuesday? Hold on. Not the second Tuesday. Let me go back. It's the third Tuesday. So MLK parade is always on MLK, the day that we celebrate MLK's birthday, which is the third Monday of in January. And so since I've been engaged with the council, specifically since I've been the point of contact for the parade, for the council, I have never gotten notification about the office's plans for the parade sooner than a couple of days before Christmas. And sometimes it was a couple of days after Christmas, but before New Year. I always knew before New Year's, but it was a toss-up whether or not I actually knew before Christmas. That's how late they are with getting notifications out, which means they probably didn't start planning until like freaking September, if not later. Anyway, but whoop, 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 I'm not tripping. So whatever. So here comes 2022. I'm like, all right. It's getting close to Christmas. I ain't heard nothing, but let's plan for it anyway. They late with it, but whatever. Christmas comes and goes, and I still don't hear anything. Okay, bet. You know, they're going to be real late this year, but it is what it is. New Year's comes. Nothing. Tell me why 2 days ago, well, this time, the day of this release, this is always released on a Thursday. So the Thursday before this has been released, this episode, last Thursday, the Office of Promotional Arts going to talk about, yeah, it's canceled again. I want y'all, we canceled it specifically so that y'all could do service on the day. On the face of it, there's nothing wrong with that statement, but here's the problem with it. The city pays the Office of Promotional Arts to put on the MLK parade. Mayor Brandon Scott had already planned a day of service. There's a particular neighborhood that he had focused on. And so there was already going to be service taking place simultaneously. And the idea was, there's always service happening everywhere across the city. So the parade only lasts, 2-3 hours at best. So if you're participating in the parade as a, as part of the, one of the people that march, or as a participant, the parade ain't gonna last but so many hours. And then once it's finished, I think 3 hours is too long. I think it's more like 1.5, 2. From start to finish, like 2 hours best. And then anyway, so you can then go and do whatever. You literally can go on about your day. There's still plenty of activities happening. And so this is just wild. And so, of course, the council is upset. Members of the council are, individual members are upset. Community members are upset. The mayor himself has asked for the resignation of the person who is the head of that department. And rightly so, again. And so in his call for that person's resignation, they cited, we pay you to put on the parade. Don't you worry about people doing actual service. That's happening all over the city. I have something planned. Now, whether or not you like Brandon Scott, that's your business. But here's the thing. We can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. I just don't understand. It's beyond me, literally. They did not cancel it for the pandemic. They canceled it so that people could go do service. And again, service on itself is not a bad thing, but this is a tradition at this point. Been going on for more than a decade. Been going on since the 90s. You tripping. And so anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen to this person's position. I imagine they're not going to have a job no more. I would hope that they're not going to have a job anymore. And the parade is still not happening. The parade is, by the time of this release, the parade is on Monday. It's not happening. What I want to know is it happening in 2024? And can y'all start planning? Can y'all start planning now? Because you really should be not behind the eight ball. You should be planning. Like planning hardcore. It's wild to me. Like, I just don't get it. Like I don't get it. I just don't get it. Anyway, so, you know, if you're not from the United States or you're not living in the United States, like you should still take a moment to just commemorate MLK for the work that his work and the work of everyone in his movement, no doubt had an impact globally, even if it was at different times. The same way that we should be, and I often do, support a part of the diaspora. We support people who've done revolutionary things across the diaspora, as we should, because what happens in one country to people who look like you, like that those good works transcends borders, governments. And so anyway, you know, I'm going to the council. We're going to do service. We're going to be serving it down in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. on that day. And still advocating for there to be more order in that office and for them to bring back this rich tradition that is honoring Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and legacy through this wonderful parade that not only attracts the Divine Nine, but also a lot of young people march in that parade. What in the world? Somebody who's not a part of the diaspora, for sure. That's the only thing I can think of. That you would think a parade is just a parade. It's a symbol. It's something that is, I'm so disappointed. It's beyond me. I'm so disappointed. That's like a parade. So parades are big anywhere, right? Anywhere, right? That's like if you were in the UK and they canceled, like that's precisely like when Charles, well, maybe he's not a good example, but like any of the parades that y'all have, they're tradition, right? But there's other things that are attached to that tradition, right? And I guess I'm using them as an example, but like literally, there are things that you do in your communities that are tradition that go a long way to commemorating someone's life, someone's legacy, the culture. Like, this is a cultural celebration. Yes, we are honoring MLK, his life and legacy, but this is a cultural thing too. I'm talking about every aspect of Black life you can think of, religious, non-religious, the whole spectrum of identity is in the doggone parade. Babies are in the parade marching. I don't get it. High schools, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's disrespectful that it was canceled. It's unacceptable. And it better come back next year. And that leadership probably should turn over, because that's some old bull. They should probably turn over. But anyway, let me let this go before I really get it going. But anyway, switching gears to I'm going to talk more in the next segment, but I know that there's a lot happening in these franchises. I know Henry Cavill, who was the lead guy for The Witcher, has been going through it. I know he's no longer with The Witcher now, that whole series. I know that he's also not Superman anymore. People are going in a new direction. And they're reviving, I don't know, they're just doing something new with these franchises. And I know that as an actor, that cannot be good. And I know that for the fans, it's probably not a great feeling either, that some actor that you've come accustomed to rendering this character that you believe is larger than life, and maybe that you've grown an attachment to, and now that this person is no longer behind this character, I know that that can be upsetting for a lot of folks. And so, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of chatter, but I'm not so invested in it, only because I thought the TV show was cool. It's sci-fi, but it's one of those things where, well, fantasy, but it's one of those things where, like, you got to hunt for people of color to be in it. And I just don't enjoy doing that in fantasy, because it's fantasy. I shouldn't have to hunt. I shouldn't have to imagine there are someone who's a person of color or multiple people of color. I shouldn't have to hunt for people of color leads. Like, you giving me one or two, that's bozo. That's yikes. That's some wild behavior. And so anyway, like, I enjoy watching The Witcher because it was interesting. It was good TV. But like, I'm not married to them switching up actors and stuff as long as it's good. And so when this Blood Origin comes out, I'm like, girl, do I even want to watch this? And then I saw the trailer. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll watch it because there is a Black woman lead. Not only is there a Black woman lead, but there's also an Asian woman lead. And that lady, the woman, the actress who is the Asian woman co-lead. I feel like she was in Flying Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I think she was in it. When I tell you, she was either in that or Hero. Those two films are by far my favorite films, hands down, because it's like history, but it's also like a little sci-fi. I don't know. That's you got me. If you can, I don't know. I'm just excited. I loved those. I love both of those films. Somebody hollering underneath I'm distracted. Anyway, I think she was either in Flying Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or Hero. And she was definitely in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which I have not seen. My mom saw that and she said she couldn't get through it. She only got to 20 minutes of it because it was so confusing. My homegirl mom was like, oh, shit, I loved it. So I'm going to watch that eventually. But I really do like this actress. I think she's cool. And so I was like, all right, give me these two. That's fine. Still a lot of non-people of color leads or actors in here. But let me live with these two for now. Anyway, so I watched it. Overall, I will say it is intriguing and it kept me entertained. I have a lot of thoughts about it. And so I'll talk about that in the next segment. But anyway, what I know is that this prequel, there's a lot of stuff that I missed and I'll talk about that. I think prequels have their place. Did we need this prequel? I don't know. But anyway, I'll talk more about that in the next segment. But anyway, so stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening and sticking around. Definitely share this with anybody that you think might dig it. But anyway, in the next segment, it's all about The Witcher, Blood Origin, the prequel to The Witcher series. Okay, before I get into The Witcher, I do want to give an update. Some things have happened since I recorded the intro to this episode, and long story short, the MLK parade is back on. The mayor asked for, or called for, the resignation of the head of the Baltimore Office of Fine Arts and Music, I guess. I think that's the full title or whatever. Because of just everyone being so frustrated. I wasn't paying attention, but I knew that there were some voices who were frustrated, but I didn't know that there were so many voices in the community that were just as frustrated as I was. And so Mayor Scott was just going back and forth on social media and then decided. So two things happened. So I think it was announced on like Saturday. So the Saturday before the airing of this episode that, my bad. It was announced Monday. The Monday before, 2 Mondays ago. So not this past Monday of the airing episode, but the week prior that the parade was going to be. That Thursday. So it was after the release of my last episode that the parade was going to be canceled. And so I, everybody was frustrated, scrambling. We decided that the mayor was hosting a cleanup in this community at this particular location. And so we were just informally encouraging everybody in my chapter. Well, actually this hadn't reached my chapter yet, but everybody in the council, NPHC council, were informally just signing up to go clean up there. And whoop, 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 on Thursday, this past Thursday, so last week, Thursday, after the release of last week's episode, here come the mayor talking about, nah, I'm hosting my own thing. This won't stand. I'm hosting my own thing. We're still going to do this and I'm still going to host my cleanup. I'm just going to split my time because we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Anyway, so, but it's feeling very messy. And if I'm honest, it feels very messy when you have a good parade. Like, I understand that money changes things and, you know, that's why some people get paid the big bucks. But when you're putting on something like a parade, it takes time for people to organize their floats and things like that. And remember, even at the last, at the their most last minute, we at least know between Christmas and the New Year holiday so that we can prepare. If you want any sort of decent floats, you need time. Unless people are always just have it in a warehouse somewhere, and that's not typical. And so it's very late. It's very rushed. And so my initial attitude was, I don't want to participate in that. But the more I began to talk with folks and listen and things, it's clear that there is a desire, because the parade is back on, that we participate. And so my chapter is collaborating with the other chapter in the Metro Baltimore area to represent Sigma Gamma Rho. So Sigma Gamma Rho is going to be out there in force and being cute and whatnot. And I'm going to walk with them. But also, I'm going to find a way to walk with the PAN too, the council, as well, because we're having, we're registered as well. But the best we're going to be able to do is go get some, for the sorority, go get some gold, blue and gold beads, and from Party City, and some blue and gold candies from Party City, a little, you know, those little mints, you know, Party City is good for it, and wear our para and have our banners and call it a daggone day. Like that's what we're fixing it. Like that's what we're about to do. That's what we're able to do. And then the council, like, I think the council's going to have like a car or something like that. So we'll do the same. We'll have the PAN banner, and then black and white candy and black and white beads, and call it a day. Like, that's about the best we're going to be able to do with such short notice. And I just don't like the jankiness of it, because here's the other thing. Sigma Gamma Rho, we're in a better position. Well, no, because both of our chapters are decent sized. So we going to have a showing of folks. It's just harder for the PAN because it's multiple chapters. And, all the chapters are doing stuff. It's late in the day for all of this. And I understand the mayor's desire and frustration with the organizer. But like, my thing is, you should have been frustrated back in December when there was no information out. The 15th. January 15th was always going to be that date since the last celebration. Like, you knew January of 22 when the parade was going to be, or at least when the MLK Day was going to be in January 23. So like, I'm not impressed with the last minuteness, because that's something that somebody in his office should have been checking. They pay Baltimore Office of Promotion or the Arts to put things on. They give them a sizable amount of money. So like, I'm not really sure where the disconnect is. Anybody that you pay, you can check up on, right? And so Artscape, I know is, I'm just saying, there were a lot of bad decisions in programming this go round. Artscape being, I think two things. I think Artscape being, and I'm going on a tangent, but Artscape being canceled in 22. The AFRAM being scheduled on Juneteenth at the last minute. While I think it being held on Juneteenth is a good idea, I think it being scheduled at the last minute was a terrible idea. And so it just feels like more of the same. So I appreciate the mayor's desire to make sure that we keep this rich tradition alive as long and do it safely. And I understand that completely, because, you know, it's something that is it's a morale booster, not only for the participants, but for the people who show up. It's fun. Who don't like a parade? It's fun. It's a community activity. It's too fun. But like, this is so last minute, and I'm afraid it's gonna be janky. If I'm honest with you, I'm afraid it's gonna be a little janky looking. Anyhow, but we're gonna do it. We're gonna be there, and I'm gonna switch between both both entries, I guess, whatever you call groups. I'm going to switch between both groups on the day and enjoy. I'm going to have a good old day. You know what I mean? I'm still going to have fun, but it's just janky. But here's the other thing that came out. So I told you in the same breath that the mayor was like, nah, we having a parade. He was also calling for the resignation of the head of the office. And so, yesterday, the day before today, the release day of this episode, the head resigned. Duh. Because come on. You should have resigned. You absolutely should have resigned. Here's why. Not just because of the parade and the mishandling of the parade and that last minute, y'all should just serve in honor of MLK. Like, you could have been, if that was going to be what you were planning to do, you could have saved us some time and energy and said this back in September. That would have been a prime time to say it, but you're so last minute with it. But like, it's not just the parade. It's literally the decision making on most of the cultural festivals that the office is responsible for. Like, not everything went terribly last year. CIAA went off without a hitch. For those who don't know, CIAA is a basketball tournament for the HBCUs in the CIAA conference. So that's North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, all the HBCUs, Delaware, I think, is in the CIAA. All the HBCUs in the Mid-Atlantic, it's a Mid-Atlantic conference. Collegiate, but specifically NPHC, I mean, not NPHC, but HBCU conference. And so it's a basketball tournament. It's the biggest thing around. And the Baltimore City was awarded the contract a couple of years ago, and they're going to have the contract to host the conference through 2025. So the first 2 years, it was virtual because pandemic. But last year it was in person and it was a hit. We had so much fun. And so, you know, it's going to be a riot again this year. So not everything that that office did in 22 was bad. It's just janky. A lot of the decision-making was very last minute. The Artscape cancellation was last minute. It was like, Artscape is normally in August, July or August, something like that. The doggone thing was canceled in April. No, not April. May. No. Yeah. It was canceled. It felt like it was canceled in like the springtime, which feels late. It feels late, and also it just feels late, but not as late as canceling the doggone parade. But anyway, no, it was probably canceled later than that, because I feel like we learned about the parade being canceled or Artscape being canceled the same time we learned about AFRAM being scheduled on Juneteenth. So that had to have been. Yeah, it was probably April, if I'm honest. Anyway, which means that AFRAM is scheduled for July, because it is July. So it goes AFRAM in July, and then, Artscape in July, AFRAM in August. But I don't know. It's been so long. Anyway, it just felt like short notice, and like, why are you tripping? Why is this canceled? I don't understand. And so a lot of people were frustrated. I'm very much looking forward to it this year. And since there's going to be new leadership at the Office of Arts, Office of the Arts, that maybe it'll go off without a hitch, hopefully. But that's not always how that works. Anyway, but yeah, it was just lots of fits and starts in 22. And this was just the hit the nail on the head. So last minute. For that person, I do wish them well, but like, that was janky. And I hope that everybody in our department is on notice that you need to shape up and make sure you do things in decency and order. Decency and order. I understand things happen at the last minute, and I understand sometimes last minute cancellations are avoidable, but this didn't feel like, or not avoidable, but this one felt very avoidable. So anyway, I expect that it'll be okay. It's going to be just okay. It's not the parade, going to be just okay. But I am looking forward to a successful CIAA conference in February. I'm looking forward to Artscape and AFRAM being all that it needs to be, the Hispanic Heritage Festival, the Greek Festival. I'm looking forward to it all. I'm looking forward to it all being good, well organized, because of course it's going to be well attended. Shoot. Anyway, but nevertheless, let me keep going, or let me move on. I just wanted to add that update. But anyway, so, okay, The Witcher. I'm gonna be 100% honest with you. There was a lot, and if you hear my husband, he playing the game, and the dishwasher machine is on, so it's loud, and other things are happening, so I'm relegated to a room that is next to where my husband is playing the game. So it is what it is. If you hear him, that's what it is. Hopefully I can reduce the noise and maybe you don't hear him. Anyway, but if you do, oh well. Anyway, this was confusing to me. I watched, there's three episodes. This thing was three episodes long. I watched it and I was confused the entire time. This, of all the prequels, this was one of those where you had to, you can watch this thing and not know the story, but there were so many, the original story, like the Witcher story, you could watch it and not know the Witcher story, but like you'd be missing a whole heck of a lot and it would be confusing. And I know I've watched The Witcher, the two seasons of The Witcher, and this was confusing to me. So I'm gonna do my best. I'm not gonna give you too much. What I will do is kind of spell out. So if The Witcher is, hold on, I gotta even get the names right, because I be tripping on the names. Hold on. Let me. Hold on. The main guy in The Witcher. I guess I need to know who the main guy in The Witcher is. Come on. Hold on. What's his name? Okay. Hold on. Before I go into, because it's important. Hold on. Oh my goodness. Okay, hold on. Geralt. Oh my goodness, I almost messed it up. Geralt. So Geralt, who was played by the guy that played Superman. Can't call his name right now, but he not Superman no more. He not Geralt anymore. He just got to create a whole new franchise for himself. Like, it is what it is. Oh, Henry Cavill. So Geralt is the Witcher. He is a magic born hunting soldier hybrid magical thing that is darn near unbeatable, that essentially is used to, it's kind of like a gun for hire a little bit, but ends up being someone that is trying to maintain order in his realm. Anyway, you know the story of The Witcher. So he's going back and forth, just trying to be on the side of right. And he falls in love with a woman who is slowly fighting her way to not be evil. But her origin is that she was an abused person and became evil because of that magic. And because she wanted to transform herself, and in transforming herself, she slipped closer and closer to the dark side, and so she became evil. And so part of the story in season one and season two is just them finding each other, and then her fighting her nature to be bad because, again, of how what she had to do to acquire the magic that she had. So anyway, and Geralt is just trying to, in a way, too, fight his own nature, to not have connections and to forge meaningful relationships and, again, stay on the side of right. So there's a whole world that exists where he is just going back and forth and trying to stop evil armies or an evil army of folks from turning the whole world evil or whatever, or at least that whole realm evil, right? So that's a gross oversimplification of The Witcher, but you can watch it or read up on The Witcher in the comic books to know more about that. The origin story, the Witcher blood origin is literally, if I'm not mistaken, two things are happening. It's literally the origin of Geralt. If I'm misunderstanding it, it is these three episodes are detailing literally how we got Geralt, but then also how we got Geralt type of entities. And then generally speaking, how we got to the events of The Witcher, where different kingdoms are warring with each other and making alliances to build stronger forces to combat other people, right? So in this context, yeah. So, oh my goodness, there's so many. Oh, I'm saying there are four episodes. My bad, there are four episodes. And so one of the things that you need to know is that, or you need to remember, in The Witcher, a bard or a storyteller is Geralt's sidekick. And it's important for him to be able to be present for history as it's being made, because he's turning it into songs, and songs is the way to keep history in this universe. Songs are the way to keep history, and it's a nod to actual real life. In many ways, all cultures, at least initially, had, before there were novelists and journalists who were putting things in books, there were people who were writing songs and poems and performing them and passing them along, passing them along to other folks in different communities that would share keep the history, basically. Keep the history through song. And so that was true. That's true in real life, that was part of our history. And so, of course, in this realm of the Witcher realm, bards are the keepers of the history. And so there is a bard that is literally essentially at Geralt's hip, essentially crafting story and telling it in ways that make sense while all this history is unfolding. And so the blood origin absolutely follows this tradition. In fact, the bard that is at Geralt's hip in The Witcher, we meet essentially, how can I explain this? We meet in the beginning of The Witcher blood origin because somebody has to tell the origin story of how we even got here. And there are some fancy things that happen in the very, very beginning. I will say this, we meet the bard actually in the field of battle, reluctantly in the field of battle, but nevertheless, the same bard that was at the hip of Geralt, we meet him in the field of battle, and he's frozen. He's frozen because a magician or a sorceress has frozen him so that, and shapeshifted into a form that he can appreciate so that she can pass along this story of the origin of Geralt and all of the issues that set the stage for the timeline that The Witcher season one and season two live in. And so with that as the backdrop, let me give you the premise. Set 1,200 years before the events of The Witcher television series, Blood Origin depicts the creation of the first Witcher, as well as the events leading to the conjunction of the spheres. It also explores the ancient elven civilization Exterra before its demise. Geralt of Rivia's bard ally, Jack Skier, who we're just going to call him Bard, is saved from a war by the mysterious elf Shaun Kai, where she has him write down the untold legend of seven warriors who went up against the forces of Exterra following its coup d'etat. So the seven warriors: Sophia Brown as Ellie. She's a warrior of the Queen's Guard and member of the Ravenclaw, or the Raven Clan, who leaves to become a traveling musician. This is Sophia Brown. It's the black actress. She's supposed to be the leader of the bunch. And she's actually key, believe it or not. I'll come back to why she's so key in the story after I go through all of the lead actors and then give you my overall thoughts. So Lawrence O'Farian plays Figil, I think you call it Figil, an elf born into a clan of warriors called the Dog Clan, sworn to protect a king, but instead sets out in need of vengeance. Mirren Mack plays Merwin, the history-obsessed princess of Exterra, whose life is controlled by her brother King Alvatir, but who seeks to forge her own path. Lenny Henry as Chief Druid Baylor, a mage who has learned how to open gates to other worlds and has a plan of his own. Jacob Collins Levy as Eredin, the commander of the Exterran army, but with several secrets. Joey Batts as Jack Skier, a bard who once traveled with Geralt of Rivia, and who is saved from likely death by the mysterious Shaun Kai. Zach Wyan as Syndril, the elf mage who has discovered how to open gates between worlds. Lizzie Annis as Zakare, an elfin mage who is Syndril's celestial twin. Celestial twin just means that you were born under the same star in the same year, I think. Hua Novelli as Colin, Brother Death, a retired sailsword who tracks down Ellie, Figil, and Cyan. Francis Mills as Meldorf, a dwarf on, I think dwarf is dwarf the right? A little person on a quest of revenge who wields a warhammer named after her late wife, Gwen, who was raped and killed by Exterran soldiers. Amy Murray as Fenric, Baylor's druid apprentice who is deaf. Minnie Driver as Shaun Kai, a mysterious figure who rescues Jack Skier because she wants him to tell a tale about the conjunction of the spheres. Michelle Yeoh as Cyan, the last member of a nomadic tribe of sword elves called the Ghost Clan, who is on a mission to retrieve a blade stolen from her people. And finally, Dylan as Uthrok One-Nut, a sailsword's colleague of Cyan. Okay, so I'm going to focus primarily on Ellie, Figil, and Merwin. In the beginning of our tale, we meet Merwin, who is a princess, who is essentially locked away in her tower in her room by her father, because her people Exterra are at war with some other tribes, or not other tribes, other kingdoms. And so to keep her safe, they locked her away, and by they, her father locked her away, and I don't remember her father's name, but her father and her brother, who's the next in line, locked her away so that she can be safe. And Figil was sworn to protect her. And what we find out very quickly is that Figil and Merwin have a romantic relationship that is forbidden. He is the king's guard, and he is not supposed to have a romantic relationship with her. And whoop, 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 it's found out. I think somebody walks in on them after they've finished a session, and Figil is actually excommunicated. And in the time that he's excommunicated, and goes on his quest to find himself and find his new way of life, Merwin decides to take her future in her own hands. At this point, some wild stuff is happening, and long story short, her father and brother and most of her leadership, as well as the leadership of seven kingdoms, are destroyed. And it's the seven kingdoms of the tribes that I just mentioned. So Raven Clan, Dog Clan, Exterra, hold on. Oh, so Raven Clan, Dog Clan, Exterra, and four other tribes or four other kingdoms, their leadership is killed. Their leadership is killed, and Merwin's brother is among that leadership that's killed, in a tragic setup, basically a demon that has been summoned by what's old dude's name? Chief Druid Baylor. And what we come to know is that Merwin was in on it. Merwin was in on it because this was her pathway to be her own woman. But unfortunately, things don't go as planned. But in the meantime, what we do know is that this didn't happen at her hands, but she knew about it. This total destruction of all of these folks, of all of these leaders, because there was supposed to be, this is what precipitated this whole thing. There was supposed to be a joining, a truce among all seven of the kingdoms. And Merwin was due to marry someone from one of the other kingdoms. But instead, on the day of the announcement of this, her betrothal to someone from another kingdom, this treacherous act happens that she's aware of, and she conveniently excuses herself before everything goes down. And actually, a lot of the leaders from those seven kingdoms who were in the know excused themselves. Or a lot of the second in commands and third in commands excused themselves because they had already had this backdoor deal. And so Merwin was one of them, one of the people that excused themselves. And then the terribleness happened, and most of the leadership perish at the hands of this awful beast. And so we are left with this new kingdom that has been created with Merwin at the top of it. She's the queen of this kingdom, but queen not in the way that she expects to be queen. And so anyway, she has her own struggle there. Then we find Figil, who finds himself again excommunicated from Dog Clan and finds himself in the outskirts of the world in this place where he's getting drunk, and he almost meets his end, but runs into Ellie, who also, is it Ella or Elia? how you say, Elle. I'm going to call her Ellie. Ellie, who finds herself too in the same place on the outskirts of the world, having excommunicated herself. And I guess that's the difference. Sigil was excommunicated. Ellie excommunicated herself because she didn't want to be a warrior anymore. She wanted to be a bard and sing songs and tell stories. This unlikely duo come together because they learn of the destruction or the massacre of all of the leadership of the seven kingdoms. And they initially are just trying to survive, but end up along the way, why it's seven, they end up picking up more people. So they pick up, Sigil, and they pick up Zakari and Brother Death and Meldoff and Cyan. Yeah, and then Uthrok One Nut. They've picked them all up one by one for different reasons because all of them have different skill sets. And all of them belong to kingdoms who are now all but wiped away. The leadership who hasn't been wiped away, or at least the people who have not been wiped away, are now joined into the Xterra kingdom, basically. And so, anyway, that's the movie. So we move, or the series, and so in four episodes, what started out as Ellie and Sigil end up being slowly seven, and then once the seven are assembled by the third episode, the fourth episode, they're fighting to figure out how to beat Merwin. So let me just pause there for a second, and let me just back up. Overall, this series was interesting. It was interesting and exciting, but not as interesting and not nearly as exciting as The Witcher, because we already know we needed to get to the creation of The Witcher and the events that took place to get to The Witcher. And Ellie is a very important character, and Sigil is important, but only for in relationship with Ellie. Or his relation to Ellie. And in fact, two major things by the end of this thing, two major things happen. One, a Witcher is actually created, but at a great cost. And two, the first Witcher is created, but only at a very great cost. And the creation, a second generation Witcher is created, which ultimately leads to Geralt being created, but 1200 years later. So yeah, it feels very much like this is a prequel that was made out of desperation. Like, if it feels as if this prequel was in the works and then the ground began to shift under the writer's feet, and so they created this, and then they cast it, and then they made it. So it feels rushed. In parts it feels rushed, in other parts it feels like completely unnecessary. Like, and when I'm saying that there are parts of it that are rushed, what I'm saying is I would have loved to learn a little bit more about this. I would have loved for them to take their time. And then in other places, it's just like, y'all just making up story. And there's really no need for all of this. Because the reality of it is, what we know is there's likely, if there is a season three, the fandom might not be in love with it. Like, in order for the fandom to, for this series to go beyond season three, or to season three, you might have to start it over with a new person, because I just don't see how you're going to replace the actor who played Henry Cavill in season three and act like nothing happens. Or you're going to get rid of Geralt completely and go in a different way. And either way, I don't know that the fan base is going to be there enough. It's such a niche story and a niche anti-hero story too, that I don't know. But again, what do I know? There's a whole comic book out there, so maybe there is the fan base for it. It's just, if you're going to replace an actor, you need to replace them with somebody who's either, you need to start the series over, or you need to replace them with somebody. You need to cut them out of the story completely and make the story about someone else. And it better work too, because that's still going to be a gamble. It's like Black Panther. Black Panther was always going, even though we know that Black Panther, there are multiple Black Panthers, that was a huge risk making Shuri the Black Panther after Chadwick passed away. That was a huge risk, and I think it paid off, but it was still nevertheless a risk. But I think there was already loyalty to the franchise, and because there were other Black Panthers exist in the comic book series, and that there was loyalty to the franchise, the audience forgave a lot, forgave that direction and understood the direction, because they didn't just make this decision to, they didn't fire Chadwick. Chadwick passed away. He could no longer participate in the series anymore. In this context, Henry Cavill is still alive. Henry Cavill is still alive and kicking. Y'all just decided, for whatever reason, he's no longer the Witcher. He's no longer Geralt anymore, and you got a problem now. So again, that's given what I know about the behind the scenes of the Witcher, and the fact that Geralt is no longer going to be played by the same actor. Watching this prequel feels forced, and you can listen to reviews about this prequel, and you can also read them. And I think you'll find that many folks have share my sentiments, that it's not very good. It's not bad. It's interesting. And it's definitely something refreshing when you consider, in a lot of these sci-fi films, there are not a lot of Black leads in them that are carrying huge parts of the story. Ellie is carrying the biggest part of the story. She's the key to Witchers, and you learn why she's the key to Witchers, but how we get there is kind of sloppy and it feels rushed, and I would have loved for them to take more time to it, but I understand why they didn't, because there's not much story there given. Yeah, it just feels like a prequel to be having a prequel, but that at the end of the day, the writers and everybody involved in this show really don't know what the heck is going to happen next. And that's unfortunate, because they really had something good here. I'm also disappointed in how the origin ended. Even though you know something had to give in order for us to get to the events of The Witcher, I just wish it ended differently. But nevertheless, I do. It's four episodes, and I think each episode is like 45 minutes long, so it's not going to be the worst thing in the whole wide world for you to watch. And actually, hold on, let me just go back and do my due diligence, because I don't think I'm seeing, oh, I do see reviews. So let me just go ahead and say 4.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 34% on Rotten Tomatoes, The Witcher Blood Origin. Wow, that's low. Let me go into score details right quick. It's 34% on the tomato meter, so it's a dud. And the audience score is 13%. Woof. That's bad. So critics' consensus, a shallow excavation of ancient lore from Andrzej Sapkowski's fantasy series Blood Origin shares ancestral DNA with The Witcher, but little of what makes the Mothership series memorable. I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. And it feels just like a real waste of the actors, Sophia Brown-Lawrence, Foireign, and Michelle Yeoh. Like, you had Michelle Yeoh. You wasted Michelle Yeoh, but Michelle will give it to you every time. Michelle was mesmerizing on a stage or in the show, because she's always mesmerizing. She's just a captivating actor. You're gonna always be involved in anything that Michelle does, because that's just who she is. She's a scene stealer, and she steals tons of scenes in this show because it's Michelle freaking Yeoh. And I feel like y'all wasted her. Cause like, this is Michelle Yeoh. She was in House of Flying Dragons. Wait, I think I just made up a title. Anyway, you know her pedigree. You know her IMDb list. Go to it. Shoot, she done been in some stuff. She gonna give you top notch acting. And this what you do with it? Also, Ellie sang some terrible songs. I hated them. It didn't have no flavor in it. It really felt like it was slapdash. I'm gonna just let it all out. It really felt like it was slapdash. Like, I was watching it, but I was mad. But I was watching it. And I want them to do it over and put those same actors in there. Just do it over. Cause I got to have me some Michelle Yeoh. I got to have Michelle in there. That's just the way it is. But yeah, I want them to do this over. If we're going to do it, I want us to do it over. Like, even Lenny Henry plays Chief David Balor. Like, we could have got more of him, but y'all was too busy being weird. We just didn't get enough. So, long story short, it was I won't even say it was enjoyable. I really wanted to get in it, too, because I'm a sci-fi so-and-so. I love me some sci-fi stuff. I absolutely do love fantasy. But and with people of color in it, because it's people of color are everywhere. And you mean to tell me people of color aren't in your fantasy? People of color aren't in your future? That's wild to me. That's really wild and messed up. It shows a lot about you. I enjoyed the diversity. I enjoyed the different seeing representation in there. Right? But not for just for representation's sake. Again, you got Michelle Yeoh. I don't know how you did that. But anyway. And this is what you did. So watch it for yourself. Make your own draw your own conclusions. I fell where I fell. And that's where I'm at with it. I don't think I'll be watching this thing again. I've done my due diligence. Unless they get different writers and they spend more time, turn it out to 8 episodes. I'll even take 8 episodes on the origin. And make it, because shoot, this could have been 2 seasons of Origin, at least. But because y'all don't know, anyway, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at, because I was about to go off on a tangent. Anyway, so watch it, but like, it's a cult class. It feels like one of those things that'll be a cult classic because of it's bad. It's so bad in parts. Or it might be one of those where people are so mad at it that they just won't watch it. Anyway, you be the judge. You make your own decision. Yeah, so I'm done now. Thank you so much for listening, because I'm about to go off again. So thank you so much for listening before I go off again. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for rating, reviewing this show 4 or 5 stars and leaving positive comments. Thank you for sharing this too with anybody who would dig it. If you're doing anything I hope you are doing something, you're observing MLK Day, even if you're not from the United States, I hope you're observing it in some way, because the work, MLK wasn't perfect, but the work that he and his group stood for was perfect. And I think we should always be continuing to strive for justice, for impactful service, for impactful change, always. So do something good for the community on the 15th. All right. Thank you once again. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself, and be well. Until next time.